This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. Okay, guys, I am probably one of the most accident-prone people on the planet. You can blame it on many things, bad luck, poor spatial perception, but it all results in the same thing. Bree can injure herself literally anywhere, anytime. Take, for instance, last week, I was plucking my eyebrows, people, and I stabbed myself in the hand. Next thing I know, I am bleeding everywhere going, what the heck just happened? But luckily for me, I had some Active Skin Repair on hand, just one spray, and it felt so much better. By the next day, it was not red, not sore. It was fantastic. I love this stuff. Active Skin Repair can be used to treat a wide range of skin issues, and since it's all natural, non-toxic, it's perfect for people like me with sensitive skin. It works by utilizing hydrochloric acid, which mimics a natural immune response to cleanse, soothe irritation, reduce inflammation, and support the healing. With over 500,000 happy customers, thousands of five-star reviews, and ingredients that are so safe and clean that it can be used from the youngest member of your family all the way up to the oldest, most accident prone like me, you can have one simple solution for your family's skin health needs. So visit www.activeskincarerepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and get 20% off your order by using the code NOGUILT. That's www.activeskinrepair.com. Use the code NOGUILT to get 20% off your order.
Welcome to the No Guilt Bomb podcast. I am your host, Joanne Crone, joined here by my Happy New Year co-host, Bree Tucker.
Well, hello, hello, everybody. Welcome 2022.
It is 2022.
I swear if I had an air horn right now, but I'm all cheering, and now our mascot, Addie the dog, is like, what's going on?
She'll just start jumping and like gnawing at our hands moment now. Today's episode, we have a good one for you. We have Brittany McBride back on the podcast talking sexuality and when it clashes with family values. This is a really interesting topic for me because I know that like sex is a kind of a taboo topic in America. I
mean, we can admit that. It's not something that we regularly talk about. And it's also one of those things that I feel like in our society, many of us, if I had to make a real armchair generalization, I think many of us rely on our schools to handle the beginning of those discussions with our kids.
And there's also a lot of shame around sex in our society. Like we're told like it's dirty, it's improper, and just this whole not talking about it further like cements that shame associated with sex. And it shouldn't be, because I mean, it's procreation and it's pleasure and it's all those things.
Right. And we're not like advocating that, you know, our kids should go out and do whatever, but we're also saying sticking our head in the sand and just telling them to ignore it isn't going to fix it.
Well, I think there's a real, like, it's a conflict because people think that talking about sex means that kids are going to go out and have sex. And that's not true at all. And Brittany goes into that a bit in the episode. However, stay around after our interview, because I'm going to share something that happened with me in my life and some huge opinions I have over this issue that, you stick around. But for now, I want to introduce Brittany McBride, MPH. She's the Associate Director of Sex Education at Advocates for Youth. She supports school districts and youth serving adults to provide complete inclusive sex education. She helps parents, caregivers, and youth. And it's completely fact-based in a non-shaming and affirming way.
Way to go, Brittany!
Brittany has an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old, so she is a mom as well. So we hope you enjoy our interview with Brittany. 2022, Brie. Guess what that means?
That means something's coming.
Happy Mom Summit is happening in just a little under 2 months. February 28th is when it all kicks off.
I'm getting nervous about all the things.
Oh my gosh. Things. We have the best speaker lineup for you. It is going to be such an amazing week, because you're going to learn how to yell less while still raising respectful and responsible kids, and how to make sure you take that self-care without feeling guilty, as well as kind of examining the ways you're thinking about kids' behavior. It's going to be like eye-opening. I cannot wait for it.
Oh my gosh. It's going to be like a week long of like almost the next best thing to therapy every day.
It's like...
in what
we would picture a No Guilt Mom live event to be, but it's online in your pajamas. So if you live like far, far away and we couldn't, like, it would cost more to see us in person, guess what? Happy Mom Summit. Mark your calendar February 28th. But to know about it, you need to be on our email list. And to get that, download our Happy Parent Checklist. It is at noguiltmom.com/HPC. And now on with the show.
You want mom life to be easier. That's our goal too. Our mission is to raise more self-sufficient and independent kids, and we're going to have fun doing it. We're going to help you delegate and step back. Each episode, we'll tackle strategies for positive discipline, making our kids more responsible, and making our lives better in the process. Welcome to the No Guilt Mom Podcast.
Hey, Brittany, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, y'all. I'm so excited to be back.
Yeah, I'm so excited. She's a two-timer.
A two-timer. Yeah, you're in a two-timer.
You're in the two-timer club. Like a t-shirt made or something.
Oh,
like,
my gosh. Yes. I'm opening my notebook and I am making a note right now.
Two-timer t-shirt.
T-shirt or like a nice mug. They can hold up a mug that says, I'm a two-timer.
Oh, a mug would be good.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
That is what everyone needs. Definitely. Well, we're so excited to have you back because last time you were on, we had a great conversation about talking about sex with kids.
Yes.
And today we're going to talk about like how to handle kids' sexuality because we brought up to you, we've been getting a lot of questions from parents about, you know, what do you do when your child comes to you and they say they're bi or they say mm-hmm. they're gay? And how do you respond as a parent? And we wanted to get the best information out there. And we know it's you. You have the best information out there.
Brittany, you are phenomenal. I think a big thing too to add into this is that, and you've probably, I think we've all seen it at least once or twice, where not only are you faced with trying to figure out how to best support your child in the sexuality conversation, but what do you do when they ask you about it and it doesn't necessarily mesh with your family values or maybe your religious beliefs at the time, but at the you end up with like, this like torn.
Yeah, we have like, we have kind of two scenarios here.
Yeah.
Okay,
one,
great.
One is where parents fully support it. They're, you know, it's aligned with love is love. And the values. And that's very much where Bree and I stand on the issue too.
Yes.
Right. But we also have parents coming to us who they weren't raised that way and they're not sure how to approach it. Right. So first, like generally, like how do we talk to kids about sexuality? Like how do we start?
Yeah. So super common question. And it's very relevant because I kind of handle the side of sex education in schools. And when we talk about values in schools, we say that's not our job. And we encourage all of the students to go home and have those conversations with their parents. So any parent or caregiver at home, you should know that whatever they're learning in school is just the content. It is just the science of everything. And then we encourage them to go home and continue those conversations with their parents. So they are going to come. They're hopefully going to come and talk to you about your values as a family and as a community. And you want to be able to consider yourself and have your children consider you as an askable adult. So it's all about trying to be as open and as willing to have these conversations as you possibly can. And I have yet to meet a parent who doesn't care about the health and the well-being of their child.
Right.
And so approaching those conversations with that mindset of, I want my child to come back and ask me more questions. I want to continue the conversation is always a safe way to talk about these topics where you may feel a little bit nervous that maybe your values don't align. And that's perfectly fine. So for parents of kids who are really young, who are trying to learn about their own personal values, it allows the parents and the caregivers the ability to kind of share their thoughts and their opinions. I think the best way to do that is that we make it very clear that these are my opinions and encourage them to find those safe spaces to kind of navigate and determine their own values and opinions. And really kind of approach it as more of like, how do we respect people who have differing opinions and values than us? And then that allows us to kind of focus on some of those universal values of every person deserves respect. Every person deserves to be treated with kindness. How can we do that? How can we show people? How can we reinforce those universal values? Is a great safe space if you kind of feel like there may be a little bit of a disjointed approach to how you feel about things. So really, it's about just like educating yourself, really getting a clear understanding around what sexuality is, sexual orientation, doing as much research as you can so that you feel comfortable to have those conversations and being an askable adult who is consistently available.
Willingness and openness and the willingness to continue the conversation yes. too is like totally what I hear from you, because I think like as parents, we just want our kids to keep talking to us. Yeah.
Yes.
Because if they stop talking to us, we get no information and we can't lead them in any sort of like direction whatsoever.
Right. Well, and I think it's also that spot in the back of your head. Like it's the conversations that they aren't having with us mm-hmm. that are the real concerning ones, I think.
And then who are they having them with?
Exactly.
It's the next question. Like, because if they're not talking to us, then who are you talking to? And is that a person who is a credible resource? Are they willing to do like really good research and kind of understand things? So we want to make sure that one, we're not the only askable adult in their lives. Helping them to determine who else in their lives they can go to for questions is incredibly important. It offers so much protection to our young people. But in order for us to be those askable adults, like we have to put ourselves out there and try to start having these conversations with our kids as soon as we possibly can. And you may be surprised. Your kids may know way more information about this than you do. And it could be a really fun shift in the paradigm around who knows the content and then kind of just learning things together. Because that's how I always find out. The young people know way more than me consistently. Like they are the experts. And so I'm just like, okay, you tell me what to do on how to do this the best way possible.
Right.
Yeah. And being okay with that, being okay with like being in that position to be open to learn and understand new things. And we're constantly evolving and realizing like things we did in the past weren't always the best. And that's mm-hmm. okay. My mom jokes, she brought me home from the hospital holding me in the front seat. And then, you know, nowadays they check to double, make sure that the car seat is in correctly and you got to get a check out before you can leave. So yeah. as we learn better, we do better.
Hey, all, it is Joanne
and Bree here.
And we want to tell you about a podcast that you should check out. It's called Understood Explained. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Uturbe, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
And in this latest season of Understood Explained, it covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. We actually just listened to the episode, IEPs, Does My Child Need an IEP? And here is what we loved about it.
I loved that it was so digestible. Like it was such a short episode and all of the topics, which could be really confusing to parents, were easily explained.
And I loved how they gave great concrete examples because you know how much I love me a good example. They explained what kind of services and supports you could actually see on a child's IEP or individual education plan. And they explained those acronyms. That nothing drives me more crazy than when there's acronyms and I don't get it. I don't know what it stands for. They took the time to explain everything in so much detail and to cover concerns that a lot of families have about special ed services.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains, or just click on the link in our show notes.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
Well, I think that brings up a big point because parents right now, especially parents who are like in their late 30s, early 40s or 40s, like we didn't have kind of the same environment around sexuality growing up. In middle school, there were not like kids who were openly gay or openly bi because it wasn't socially acceptable then, even though I'm sure it still existed. We just didn't know about it. And we didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah. Right. So those conversations, there's so many things that I feel like as a parent of teens that I can reflect back on my own childhood, my own teenage years and go, I remember going through that. I know what I kind of got an idea of what you're dealing with. And I can kind of help guide you. This worked great for me. This was awful for me, you know, blah, blah, blah. But like Joanne just said, a lot of us, like, even though we may have been totally cool with it, it still wasn't a conversation that was being had back then. Mm-hmm. So the fact that it is such a prevalent conversation, especially in like social media and whatnot these days, our kids are coming to us with questions, I feel like, at a younger age than what we were asking about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so sometimes we're just so like, what do we do with it? Like, you know, it's so much harder for us to be able to have the conversation with kids because we can't reflect back on having the conversation with our own parents.
Yeah.
I do not remember having a conversation like this with my parents when I was younger.
No.
And think about it. We didn't have the ability to always have this conversation. Like, we didn't know how to communicate effectively. There wasn't an education. There wasn't something happening in the schools where we were even talking about, this is what gender identity is. This is what we mean when we say sexual orientation. So it's hard to have those conversations when you don't have the foundation or even the ability to communicate with someone else about what's going on. Right. And I think we have seen the outcome of that, and it's been incredibly negative. We find that students who identify as LGBT are at a higher risk for countless negative health outcomes. They are more likely to experience suicide ideation, drug and alcohol abuse, more likely to not feel safe within their own school, so that they have higher rates of absenteeism and are constantly feeling left out of the classroom. They do not feel like their families are reflected, their needs are being met. And we've just, as a whole, did not do a good job years ago making sure that we were meeting the needs of the individuals in our classrooms. So we are now really taking a health equity lens, which means because we haven't provided the bare minimum to so many people for such a long time, we are now going above and beyond to make sure that we are providing more to them so that they can start at the same starting line as all of the other students in the classroom. So we want to make sure that when we are teaching sex education or really any curriculum, we're including examples of LGBT adults and experts in the field. We want to include when they're role playing, we want to make sure that not all of the couples are meeting heteronormative expectations. We want to make sure when we talk about families that we are talking about all kinds of families. And so students feel that they are reflected not only in their schools and in the curricula, but that it's a safe learning environment. Because if my brain isn't allowed to relax enough to be able to hear information, how am I supposed to be able to get what I need in order to live my life? And so it's all about creating those safe learning environments at home, at school, at church, in your community. And the more that we can create for that, the more that our young people feel like they'll have the ability to actually get what they need to then become functioning adults.
Okay. So what you said there about feeling safe and like you need to feel safe to learn, like totally, absolutely. And you mentioned about church, and it's so hard to help people feel safe when there is so much hate and so much like negativity against the LGBTQ community out there. For instance, like I had this one exchange with an acquaintance who he posted something on his social media about Pride Month.
Yeah.
And he said, there's no pride in it. God doesn't like pride. And he's very, very Bible-based. And I confronted him about this in like pride, like not on the comments section. I texted him. I'm like, hey, I just wanted to clarify what you meant by this. It's really ambiguous. Like, I feel like this is really a hate message toward gay people. And he's like, yep, I'm a Bible guy. Oh. And I'm like, okay. And I cut off conversation, but I was also incredibly angry and mad that like that kind of thought process is out there.
Right. Or even that he was identifying it as Bible guy. I know plenty of people that consider themselves, they go to church, they follow the Bible, and they don't hate other people.
Right. No. Right. So I can't, yeah. Like, how do you justify to kids when there is this hate out there that is what I feel is unsubstantiated, mm-hmm. and yet you're trying to support them? Like, what do you say about the people who are hating?
Honestly, the kids are in a much better space than we are. And okay. I have found that young people are less patient when it comes to that. They don't understand it. I worked with some young people recently and they were just like, absolutely not. Like, this is not acceptable. And they just couldn't even understand why someone would be treated differently because of who they loved. And I think it's really exciting. So I'm like, good, y'all can take over. And like the rest of us who have like all of these problems can just disappear into the darkness. Because there's just a real shift of, it's not a big deal. Like this is just like, you know, another component of who a person is. That's not who they are. And so this being understanding of hate, I feel like is kind of dwindling the younger the generations are, because there's just like a better understanding around how to show people respect and who is deserving of respect, and it's everyone. So I'm grateful to see that I don't see that with the students. The issues are when they're hearing it at home from the adults, and it's pretty easy to navigate when you're in the classroom and you're kind of hearing students sharing values and beliefs that they've just kind of picked up from home. And I really love to just not even challenge, but just question them on, you know, well, tell me more. Like, why do you think this is okay? And because I want you to tell me, like, well, I want to hate people and I think that they aren't deserving of love, or, you know, like, I want you to actually verbalize something that is absolutely ludicrous. But also like finding those spaces to protect yourself. So I thought you did a great job, like just stepping away from that when you come across people who aren't in alignment with your values and are not willing to like respect your differing opinion as well. Really protecting yourself from those kinds of folks, because it can cause a lot of harm for those of us who may have differing opinions.
Yeah. And I just get stuck. I love that you said that the kids are actually less accepting of haters yes. now, because that makes me feel so hopeful.
Yeah. It's just our generation's baggage.
Yeah. And I like that. Yeah. I feel like the older you get, it's worse.
Right. That our generation's baggage, I don't want to say mine, but our generation's baggage isn't necessarily being passed on, isn't, you know, for sure yeah. being passed on to the younger generation.
Not in large numbers. And it's funny because like the information, when we're teaching them about sexual orientation, about using someone's pronouns, they're like, okay, yeah, like, duh, you know, like move on to the next thing. We all knew that already. It's the adults where I'm like, okay, day three of me trying to teach you about pronouns, because they're like, wait, what? What's going on? So I'm super grateful. Like young people immediately, because that's all they've ever known. And so I'm like, if we're taking the shift and yeah. as a culture of really making sure that we're addressing health inequities, I'm really confident because our young people are getting the information that they need sometimes. Not saying that there aren't people who are absolutely being impacted, specifically Black trans women are dying at rates that are just, it's an epidemic. And a lot of this, I feel like, is related to a lack of education, that people aren't afforded these spaces to talk about their sexuality. They don't feel comfortable saying like, you know, this is what I'm sexually interested in. This is who I'm interested in having a relationship with. And that uncomfortableness with like not being able to have that safe space to figure out your own sexuality can really be a dangerous thing, because then you might lash out at a person because you feel uncomfortable with like not knowing about yourself. So there's definitely a ton of room for improvement. But I feel like the really, really little ones, like they're getting it from such a young age about just basic respect for other people, that hopefully it will just continue to amplify as they get older.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory, two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck. And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it? We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders. So join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom.
Get out of there, life gunk.
Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
Wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. Because sometimes life sucks.
Unsticking It. I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. While you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
I love that you are bringing it back to that. No matter what your thoughts are, no matter what you have been brought up with as a parent, it comes down to, is one of your core values to treat others with respect and to have a tolerance for other individuals that have a different opinion of you.
Yeah.
I think that the majority of us as parents, like, we do. And we have to be reminded that, oh yeah, that is one of our core values. So even though I'm being threatened with something that doesn't match the narrative that I grew up with or the narrative that I was taught when I was younger or that I have been taught in some way, shape, or form, that's not the highest value I have. The highest value I have is respecting others' opinions because I don't want people telling me my opinion is wrong either.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's always room to like be better. You know, even when I'm working with adults who work with kids, even the most progressive person, I'm like, there's always room to do even better because I love to give them, it's sometimes about just like making sure that they understand what they're talking about, that they have the core fundamentals to be able to be successful and like truly understand like what it is that they're discussing. And oftentimes that's a big way to like, they're like, oh, okay, maybe I'm like, okay, doing this. Because I love to use this analogy of like being tolerant versus inclusive versus affirming and inviting, you know, you all over for dinner. So like if I invited Joanne over for dinner and surprise, like everybody else found out about it and their feelings got hurt. And I was like, okay, yeah, everybody else can come. That's me being tolerant. If I'm being inclusive, everyone got an invitation at the exact same time to come to dinner. If I'm being affirming, I'm checking in with you prior to making a date because I want to make sure that date works with your calendar. I'm asking if you have any food allergies. I'm asking if there's something specifically that you, you know, are you okay, comfortable with dogs? Because I have a dog in the home. I'm going out of my way to make sure that you feel valued and safe within my environment so that because I want you there and me doing that is going to demonstrate that you matter to me and you being comfortable in my space makes you feel appreciated and valued. And that's ultimately all that matters. So we can apply that to making sure that the environments we are creating for our LGBT students are the same way. I want to be affirming. I want to make sure that I'm going above and beyond to address your needs. I'm aware of things that may be problematic for you so that I can address those. I want to make adaptations and changes so that you feel comfortable and safe because you should feel valued. And every human should feel that way.
I love that.
So that's a great way to explain it because as you explain it and I look at my actions as like a teacher, I've definitely been in the tolerance side.
Yeah.
And there is space to grow.
Yeah.
I think more than not, I was always afraid at calling attention to the person and making them feel singled out. And that has what has prevented me in the past.
Yeah.
But now hearing like the affirming.
Yeah.
Those things sound great. Yeah. And they sound like, yeah, of course I would love anyone to do that for me.
Yeah.
And make me feel good.
It makes you feel all warm and fuzzy inside for sure.
Yeah. I think that's great. What would you tell parents who they have like a 10, 11-year-old come to them and they say that they're the 11-year-old tells them they're bisexual or they're gay or transsexual. And the parent like thinks that the kid is too young to be even know those things?
Yeah.
Like what advice would you give them?
I would invite that parent to really take a breath, like take a five, calm down, kind of find your space and really listen to what your young person is telling you. One, that takes tremendous bravery to go up to an adult not knowing how they're going to respond and sharing that kind of information. And remember, we want to make sure that our kids keep coming back to us so that they're ever in trouble or they need some information, that we're a safe place to go. So remind yourself of however you respond, you want that to be the end result. Two, I would be incredibly impressed that my young person, you know, had the vocabulary and was able to come and verbalize to me about, you know, that they were thinking about, you know, who they were attracted to. I think that's a big deal. And so for me, it was just about being as supportive as possible. I think for a parent who's maybe struggling with this, which is kind of, it's understandable, especially if you were not provided the core content yourself. So maybe you don't even understand what pansexual means. Maybe you don't understand what your young person means when they say that they think they might be bisexual or that they're gender fluid. It's time for you to take, not only take your break, your breather, but then do some research. Really understand what your young person is coming to you and saying. And understanding that nowadays sexuality is constantly evolving. It is constantly changing. And as we continue to get more words and abilities to communicate about who we're attracted to and who we're interested in, it will allow us the ability to communicate even better. And keep your child at the center of this. How you respond will impact how your child continues to come to you for information, how they will matriculate through life, what kind of relationships they're going to be looking for, and your involvement in those relationships. So like, if you want to continue to have a really great relationship and be engaged and be involved, really push yourself, challenge yourself. If you're feeling uncomfortable, to educate yourself, get the information and the knowledge, and then try to find those small, like low-hanging fruits to be supportive as possible. Even coming back and saying like, hey, I'm still a little unclear on what this is, but like I'm doing some research. Do you mind kind of maybe telling me some resources or somewhere I can go? And actually verbalizing like, I don't know how I feel about this because I need to learn a little bit more, but I care and I love you and I want you to be happy, safe, healthy, and whatever that is, I'm going to support you so that you can live that kind of life so that you're happy and healthy. Because I mean, all parents care about their kids in that way, you know? So just reinforcing that for them.
That's it. Yeah. We just want our kids to be happy and healthy and we're there to support them anyway we can.
And I think you brought up a good point that Joanne and I have been talking about ourselves recently, that we had a podcast interview a little while back, and I think it was with Bill and Ned, and they talked about how you're going to have a longer relationship with your kids as adults.
Yes.
Them as an adult, yes, than you will when they're younger.
Exactly.
And you have to remember that the decisions and the way that you choose to interact with your child, you know, let's say under the age of 18, is going to have a direct impact.
Absolutely.
On them as adults. And that relationship that you get to have once they are no longer under your care,
yeah,
and are choosing whether or not they want to continue that relationship with you.
Exactly. Sure. Exactly. It's all about, I just want to make sure that, you know, as a parent of two young kids myself, that I'm equipping my kids with the tools that they need for themselves, but also setting a really strong foundation around what my expectations are as their parent around how they treat other people. And that applies to treating people with respect when it comes to making the decisions around their own body. I like to demonstrate that I respect their decisions around their body, that they know their body best. And that's going to definitely and grow to include as they get older who they may be attracted to. And
yeah,
making sure that you're reinforcing that, there's no better feeling than seeing your kids, you know, kind of take that information and actually apply it. We were driving home last night, and my daughter and I were listening to a podcast about Sally Ride, who did not share who kept her life with her partner very quiet until her death. Mm-hmm. And she was just so upset in the background. She's like, her whole life, like she, you know, she was going to the doctor and the doctors are like, and who are you to her partner? And she's like, to say that she didn't feel comfortable enough to just show who she was, to share who she loved. She's like, what's wrong with the world? And I'm like, I feel like I've done my job, you know, like,
yes, exactly. Yes. What I was looking for. When they look back at the world that was around, yeah, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, and they go, what was wrong with you guys? We're like,
exactly.
It's called knowledge and progress.
Yeah.
You're getting better.
We enlighten ourselves. We move further and it's all positive.
Yeah. Cause for them, they boil it down to, you know, you should be able to go to the doctor and be supported by someone. Like, when you take me to the doctor, you know, mom or dad or somebody goes with you and supports you. So, and she's like, oh, this is just, I can't even understand this. I'm like, great. We're respecting you.
You've parenting win.
A lot of hope for kids and the kids' generation to that they're going to be taking over from all of this craziness. And Brittany, it's been amazing. So many great tips and information. Thank you so much for being a two-timer and coming on again.
We're getting mugs. I feel like I need a confetti something or...
We do. Oh, yes. I need to buy those little poppers.
Yes.
Like the little champagne popper bottle thingy. Yes.
Well, we will talk to you later.
Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Okay. So Brittany's interview. I'm like fired up, Brie. I'm fired up.
Well, I was so excited to have her back. In my family and in my life, I have people and... that have different sexualities. Mm-hmm. We have like transgender. We have like questions about, we have several members that are not heterosexual. And it's a difficult situation when there are other family members that feel like that clashes with their family values.
Yeah.
And I really felt like it was important to talk about, like, how do we talk about this in a way that's non-shaming, that like lets people know that you can be who you are, and that, again, like we talked about at the beginning, sex isn't something that you need to hide under a rug, because it's not, you can't act like it doesn't exist.
Yeah. It's hard when we talk about clashing with family values, because some of those family values are just associating sex with a shameful act.
Right. And that's generational
where it comes from.
A lot of times.
It's generational, yeah.
You know, it's passed down to us that's how it is. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us just kind of go forward with that because that's the only way we know how to talk about it.
Yeah. And so the thing that happened with me is my daughter brought home a permission slip, and she told me in the car, she's like, I have a permission slip to sign. Please just sign it, because I have to do an essay if I'm not allowed to be in the presentation. And I'm like, oh,
I love
okay.
that she already knew that. She was like, please just sign it.
I'm like, okay. I'm like, so this is human growth and development or something like that. She's like, yep, it is. I'm like, okay, just hand it over. I used to teach human growth and development classes when I was a fifth grade teacher. And I have like no shame at all talking about anything at all with my kids regarding sex. But she handed it over to me and I started reading this, and it was talking about how it was an abstinence-only education program that focused on healthy relationships, which is great, but then also focused on the consequences of having sex outside of marriage. And
seems a little loaded.
I looked at that, and Arizona is an abstinence-only education state, which I'm like, we got to move to California. But that was my first thought. But my second thought is like, this is so detrimental to kids, especially girls, because they are not getting the education they need to keep themselves not pregnant. Because you can't just tell kids like, oh, don't do it. They're not, I mean, teenage hormones, I mean, some will realize that, yes, but as Brittany's talked to us before in a previous podcast, the more information she had about it, the less she wanted to experiment with it.
Right, because it makes it less this shiny unknown object over there that you're just so interested, that box you just want to open.
Yeah.
As opposed to, oh, I know what's over there in the box, and maybe not.
And a lot of kids view sex as a way to like connect with their partner and like show their love.
Or a way to rebel.
Yeah, well, both of those. Yeah. But both of those are like misguided because they don't have the proper education behind it. So like if you think of a sweet girl, and I'm thinking of one of my past students in particular, so super sweet, so kind, so nice. I found recently she had a baby at 17 because like I believe, and I was the one who taught her human growth and development. I was the one who like had the binder in the classroom, and they have all of the teachers sign a contract that you cannot go off script at all. Mm-hmm. You cannot answer any questions that are not in there. I truly believe she did not have the proper education for staying like not pregnant, for like protecting herself in that situation.
Yeah.
And that's where it hurts to see abstinence only education come in.
Yeah.
Because the boys aren't as affected by it as the girls.
You know, I think I'm going to, because my oldest goes to the same school district mm-hmm. as yours, I think I'm going to be sending a sly little email to the district office with maybe Brittany's email, since, you know, that's what she does.
I think it's our state. Our state has the abstinence only education laws. But
okay, well, then I'm going to send it to our representatives.
Yeah, that's going to go well.
Hey, we got to start with action somewhere.
We have to start action somewhere.
And hopefully this podcast, you guys were able to hear things that resonated with you as well and gave you some direction, because this is not an easy topic. It's not.
It's not, especially if you were raised in a way to think that sex is a shameful and embarrassing thing. I saw my daughter's permission slip and I'm like, anytime that you want to hear about any ways like STD prevention, which they are doing an STD workshop, but I don't know what that involves.
If it's what I had when I was in school, it was like, look at these scary pictures. This probably. Is you.
Probably.
Oh, God, that's still, I am 42 and I can still see those pictures
they
in my head.
Oh, it makes me so mad. But I was like, come to me. I will share everything. And she's like, okay. I'm like, I doubt you're there yet. She's like, I'm not. I'm like, okay, got it.
Yeah.
But it's just a lot of work needs to be done in this, especially about like educating women and educating girls
and boys too,
but giving like education truly is power, and when like where people aren't given the correct facts or told that those facts are wrong or shameful, it really impacts everybody. So there we go. There's my thank you for coming to my TED talk, and it's my podcast. It's our podcast. I figured this is the best place to do it.
Chances are you like hearing what we have to say because you're probably like-minded.
Yes, so yes.
And we appreciate that.
So we love you all. And the best mom's a happy mom. Take care of you. We'll talk to you later.
And thanks for stopping by.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.